Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name, your name.
And welcome to Signs of Life on, the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I had to think of where we were. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I'm joined by Tom and Melissa Gould, and this is the show where we mainly address listener questions. Some new things just popped up on the horizon for the foundation. We can talk a little bit about that, long-awaited Surviving Death docuseries on Netflix has started, and we at the foundation were featured in episode number 4 of the 6 episodes, and I have watched them all. I don't know, have you guys had a chance to watch them all already?
Oh, yes. We did, Bob.
Okay. So, you know, as listeners may not know, I mean, it tackles a lot of the subjects that we talk about. I mean, actually, there are 3 episodes on mediumship. We're in one of them. I guess more of like a mediumship and grief type of a show. It starts off with the first episode is about near-death experiences, and they talk to Bruce Grayson and others, talking about some of the science behind it and talk personal experiences. And the last episode, the 5th episode is on reincarnation. And yes. Jim Tucker handles that. And a lot of compelling cases. I've read about them. I was familiar with them all. I hadn't had a chance to see the people. Did you see if you watch that one, the one with, you know, James, you know, Leitinger with the pilot, you know, and another one who remembered a past life as a Hollywood movie actor, yeah. Yes,
Marty Martin, actor and agent.
Yeah.
I just finished reading the book, Leslie Kane's book, that this was based on, and she goes into obviously more depth in the book, and it's fascinating, those kids, the things that they knew, and then they could find out. I loved the one about the Marty Martin meeting his, I guess it was the other kid, James, meeting his sister, or the meeting his former self's sister. And she, of course, was 80 years old and he was 4, but they were talking about their childhood as if they hadn't ever been apart. It was really amazing.
Yeah. Well, the problem, as you saw, is bringing the kids back to meet the prior families when they're already close to being adults, you know, when they're 18 or 19 years old. It's kind of a little bit futile, you know, because they don't remember anything anymore. You know, the memories seem to disappear around the age of 4 and 5. So, I mean, they mention they get little glimpses every once in a while on flashbacks, but nothing significant. So, as she said, it would have been a lot more, the sister, it would have been a lot more compelling if they got to meet him. Could you imagine when he was 4 or 5 and he knew everything about them, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Well, the one sister that I mentioned, the pilot sister, that their meeting was as kids. But I agree with you. That was kind of, I felt badly for the kid because he's now a teenager and clearly he was upset with all of this and was having a hard time dealing with the meeting. Plus, as you say, he doesn't at this point doesn't remember the past life.
I have to jump in and say, for those who are listening who may not have seen this, I don't feel we're really spoiling anything. It's just giving you a little more to look forward to and to draw your own conclusions about it. So you guys can keep talking, but I just didn't want anyone grumbling like Darth Vader's your father or something.
Yeah. Well, we don't want to talk about too much in depth because we don't want to ruin any surprises, you know. But, you know, some you feel may feel more attracted to than others. Just a little tidbit about behind the scenes, you know, what goes into making these docuseries. It's a tremendous effort. There's countless, I mean, just with us alone, between they came to the full grief retreat for 2.5 days with an entire, you know, crew and, you know, two truckloads of equipment. And then they spent, you know, 2 or 3 days filming with Fran and myself. So, you know, you have 50 hours of content that gets whittled down to 15 or 20 minutes, but we knew that would happen, you know, and they were filming all over the world, you know. So
that's what I particularly appreciated about this docuseries was, as you say, they were editing stuff out, and like in other medium TV shows, they only show you the hits and the wow moments. But this one was very good about showing that not every medium reading is going to be 100% wow, that there are going to be stuff that, you know, you don't get. And then that one family that got a reading and then afterwards said, well, you know, it could have been this, it could have been that. So I appreciated that they didn't just make it a wow medium show, that they made it quite fair.
Right. And yeah, I agree. It was balanced. And, you know, before we get to the listener questions, I'll do a shameless plug for my new book, The Medium Explosion. Thank you so much. So many of the things that we talk about, I mean, I write about in the book. So wanted to mention that. And of course, all the profits from the book are going to support the work of Forever Family Foundation. So we do have a whole bunch of interesting questions that people have sent in. And of course, you're welcome to call live if you would like. So let's go to the first one here. And it's first, he starts off by saying, I have read and continue to read books about mediums of 100 plus years ago. And what's striking to me is the several differences in presentation of the medium's perceived information and messages. For example, messages were almost non-existent, you know, he's talking about then, as opposed to commentary about the presence of certain spirits of past individuals, appearance, mode of dress, possible ages, employment, and where they may have lived, and so forth. So he's questioning the mediums of today do seem to be less detailed about many of these elements, dwelling on messages for the sitters. Is this intentional? And then he goes on, is the older information less of interest and less valuable, less beneficial for today's sitters? He says he's not judging. So I think that in answer to the last question, is it are the messages more or less, you know, valuable? Again, we'll go back to what we talk about a lot. You can't, in my opinion, you can't have messages be meaningful to the sitter if they're not preceded by the evidence.
Yeah.
Because if it's just I love you and I don't want you to feel bad and I want you to be happy. I mean, those are great and they're helpful to a lot of the sitters, but it's a lot more powerful if you're giving that other information first, you know, so you know you're talking to that person. If you know the person's personality and you know all the facts, and then they're followed by the messages. Too many of today's mediums, and I do get into this in the book, too many of today's mediums start off with the messages, not tied to anyone. Yeah. And then maybe they'll mix in some evidence later on. I'm sure you guys feel the same way as I do.
Well, I wanted to jump in before Tom does, just to recall that our medium, Janet Nohavik, in her books, talked about the training she had received, and sometimes we can see it in the mediums that we hear speak, because if they were trained at the Arthur Findlay College in England, it's name, rank, and serial number, basically, you know, your name, what you did, your relationship to this person. So you go on, Tom.
And how you passed.
Right, exactly.
And once you've established that and the person knows, oh, you're talking about my uncle, then you can say, well, your uncle has this to say to you. And you're absolutely right, because that is so much more meaningful than if, well, I've got a grandfather here, and you know, if you're 60 years old, is your grandfather passed? Well, yeah. Well, he says he loves you. Okay. What's that going to do for you? Absolutely nothing. But when they get into talking about, well, you know, when we were kids and we used to play down at the thing, and you used to yell Geronimo every time you jumped into the lake, and that was exactly what happened, that gets your attention a little more.
Right. Yeah,
and if I might add here, going back to the show, it was because they showed in the docuseries, they showed the modern mediums, in fact, Laura Lynn Jackson, and then they showed a trance medium and physical mediumship. And I'm not as conversant in physical or trance mediumship, but after watching the series, I say, you know, a reading with Laura Lynn was way more beneficial than any of those others. In fact, I thought the listener was getting to this in his questions, that the spiritual seances, or what you, if you will, from 100 years ago, were more about, you know, things floating around the room and apparitions. And yeah, that was like fun to see and very fascinating. But did you walk away feeling your grief lifted? I don't think so. You got to witness, I mean, for the real physical mediums, it's remarkable, and gives you that sense that, yes, there's a survival of consciousness, but when you actually sit with a medium who tells you these things, and they did touch on this, that one fellow who was a bartender and an actor, who was trying to explain how the reading affected him, and said that, you know, I can tell you these things, but what you didn't see is the personality came through. And we have experienced that, where somebody, one of your loved ones comes through in a reading, and it's not necessarily what he says, but how they say it, that they have their personality traits in what they're talking about, which is really fascinating.
Right. But some of these mediums from 100 years ago, these physical mediums, not necessarily the ones today, but a lot of them then, you know, that did go into a trance state where their bodies were taken over, and they did bring forth a lot of evidential information, you know, as opposed to just physical phenomena that you mentioned, you know. So, you know, that must have been really, you know, compelling. And also, if you want to believe all the accounts of the actual materializations, you know, if they did it with enough light, where you could see your loved one, you know, that must have been incredible. But yeah, we haven't seen much of that going on today. You know, today
Well, you know, in Leslie's book, there's a paragraph where she addresses that specifically. And one medium that she talks about, who's briefly in the docuseries, this guy Stuart Alexander,
yeah,
who talks about being a physical medium, that he spent years of, I hate to say the word religiously, but, you know, every week having a circle and sitting in that circle for hours with the same people for weeks and weeks and weeks, until finally, after hours and weeks of this, the physical manifestation started to come through, and then you got the amazing apparitions and the solid hands and things like that. And she mentions that in today's world of physical mediumships, a lot of these mediums are just quick to get out on the road and make a living at it, and they don't necessarily develop their skills enough to really give us, the casual listener or the skeptic, any kind of thing to hold on to.
Right. And I should mention, I didn't give out the number before. If anybody wants to, you know, call in with a question, you can do that by dialing 888-627-6008. Another question here. I've recently noticed things like my driver's license disappearing within a matter of minutes from when I last set my eyes on it. My first impression is that my dad uses this strategy to get my attention. Can this be so? It only started happening after his departure. If it's so, what is he trying to communicate? So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's about your car keys. I think it's just to let you know that, you know, he still exists. And, you know, as to whether or not, you know, is it possible? Can this be so? Well, you're not the only one. There's been, you know, hundreds of thousands of accounts of movement of objects, you know, over the years. I'll give you an example. I don't know if I discussed this with you, Tom and Melissa, but when I had guests here, and you know, my friend Kim, and my friend Kim was in one of the bedrooms, and I asked her if she wanted to go for a walk. We usually go on a daily walk, and she said yes. And we left for the walk, and we came back. She went into the, you know, her room, and I was out, you know, in the kitchen area, and all of a sudden she came out all frantic, and her eyes, you know, agog, and she, I said, "What's the matter?" And she said, "Before we left, I specifically took my pair of shoes, because I, you know, I didn't want to trip over, and I put them in the corner of the room, neatly placed, one next to the other. And when we came back from the walk, I walked into my room, and they were completely shifted to the other side, like 6-7 feet away, and they were crisscrossed. So, and, you know, she said it couldn't have been an accident, because she made the conscious effort just before we left, you know, to put them like that. So she took it as a sign, you know, from Fran, you know, that Fran's still here. So it is an example of movement of objects. And later on, in a EVP session, for those who don't know electronic voice phenomena, Fran was asked the question, did you move Kim's shoes? And the answer was, yes, we did it. Which, by we did it seems to be saying that she had help, you know, we did. So, unless she meant it was the combined effort of Kim and the physical and her there, I don't know. So, but there's just an example of movement of objects. So, and in that same category would be lights flickering and all that other stuff.
You know, the final question was posed by the listener, after explaining about the license moving, to say, well, what, you know, what does it mean? And I think it means, well, first of all, the stock answer, it means that they just want you to know that they're still around you, that they, you know, they're part of your life and that sort of thing. And the bigger picture for me is, and why they would want to even do that, you know, because you're not getting any message necessarily other than that there's out there. And I think the bigger message is that they not only are there, but they're there to help you. You can ask them for help in setting out an intention. If you have something, a goal that you want to reach, you know now that this discarnate, your loved one, is with you. Ask them, can you help me out here? You know, I'd like to see this happen. And I think when you ask spirit for help, it doesn't come right away always, but it does come.
Oh, that makes me think too, Bob. You've studied this a little bit more, and watching the docuseries last night, it re-energized my interest in collection of EVP. And it seemed as though the process I thought was quite lengthy, they were demonstrating doing it kind of with a quick question, or I shouldn't say a quick question, a pause, playback, a response. Do you feel it could be done more quickly, or is it more of a timed element and you have to let a player play?
You know, from what I've read, EVP is like a lot of things we talk about. Some people are just, it seems to come to them. It's like, you know, they're sort of like mediums, you know, that they attract, like I, you know, our friend, Janet Mayer, who she also happened to be a medium, but she is able to collect, you know, spirit voices more so than other people. You know, you mentioned just before, Melissa, people, you know, sitting in spirit circles for 10 years or more before they get any. The thing that's so attractive to me and a lot of people about electronic voice phenomenon is that you have the tangible result. It's not something that some person A is telling you or medium B is telling you. You're hearing it with your own ears, and it's evidence. You have it on recording tape.
Yeah,
that's cool. You know, I mean, it's, you're not waiting. So, yeah, I mean, we've seen people. We've had, if you recall, at one of our foundation conventions, you know, when we had Tom and Lisa Butler there, they did a demonstration, and they got EVP on the spot. Yeah. You know, just that, you know, live, so to speak. You know, that's a bad choice of words. It's not heard live. You know, it's heard on playback. So, yeah, some people, I know what you're talking about. Like, there was one thing in the documentary where they put on the recorder and they heard a voice right away. I don't know. You know, I mean, I've tried it myself personally a bunch of times and I never got anything, but other people get it.
Well, in that particular segment, they happened to be in a house, a historic house that was known to be spiritually charged. So I guess, you know, being in the right location when you do that is helpful, which, again, if you want to do it at home, you should do things to enhance the spirit coming before you actually try it. Music, saging to make sure you get the right, and just inviting spirit before you try that.
Oh, maybe we should add that the raising of the energy, as they did in the physical mediumship, and just sing a whole bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe I'll get back to trying again. I haven't tried in a long time. I got nothing else to do. Oh, I might as well try it again.
Hey, Bob, since we're not taking a commercial break, can you tell our listeners how to order this wonderful book? What's the best way to go about it?
Just like every other book, Amazon.
Say the name again.
The Medium Explosion.
But remember, before you go to the Forever Family Foundation website and click on Amazon from there, and then it'll register and it won't cost you anymore, but when your purchase is made, Amazon will make a donation on.
Yeah, thank you for that. It was funny. I think I told you guys. So you know, when you write a book and you look at the stats. So I looked on Amazon and it said the number one new release on reincarnation. I don't talk about reincarnation. I don't know how that happens. These weird algorithms, I don't know.
I don't know if I want to tell you on the air or not, but I wrote a review of it, and then I went to post it, and they said, well, you haven't ordered anything more than $50 in the last year, so you can't write a review.
I do all the shopping.
Yeah.
So
I did order something. I ordered some face cream from Melissa that was over $50. And 2 days later, they're sending me your orders here and all that, but they still won't let me write the review. But it's coming.
Yeah. So I not only cost you the money for the book, I cost you money for the cream. Sorry about that, Tom.
Go to good use.
Hey, wait, that's a good point. I was doing the ordering of the book, maybe because you had not been the physical orderer of the book.
Well, but it didn't matter what it was. The dollar amount was all they cared about.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. Let's go to another one. Hello. I was wondering, are mediums able to connect with babies who have been born still? I've read in a book that a medium was able to connect with a baby, but no medium I've ever met in person has been able to connect with my daughter. I would say that the mediums tell us that, yes, you know, they can, to them, a soul is a soul, and they can. I think the difficulty is, and why it's so infrequent, is that how do you transmit the evidence? You know, the baby was stillborn, you know, so it's not like if I was trying to communicate, you know, the medium was trying to communicate with me in spirit, I have a whole lifetime of physical things that I did, you know, that they can tap into. But you know, how does a mom recognize that it's their child? Well, you know,
I have a response to that. I witnessed it. I'm not sure who else was in the room at the time. Back in 2006, when we were all at, many of us were together at that Bahamas retreat of a week long of development, and the gal with us was given a short reading in one of the group settings, and the medium said, you have a child here, but a child in spirit. And she said, yes. And they said, it was a little girl. She didn't survive. And the response was yes. And then a very emotional response was that baby said its purpose was just to be wanted. And that was that's what the medium said was the child's whole purpose in reaching that point. And it certainly was wanted. It left everyone who was there in tears because, yeah, and that was, isn't that remarkable? And I hope if anyone's listening in that situation, that might be a tiny, tiny bit of consolation that sometimes that might be it. A soul is conceived just to be wanted.
Yeah, I've witnessed several readings where they talk about either a miscarriage or a stillborn, and they talk about the child in spirit being there. Which I think is important to bring up for our listeners as the question that, okay, people get it. Why haven't I gotten it? And I have to also say I've had dozens of readings because I, you know, I'm in the biz of seeing what mediums are and what they do. And I have had some great communication with my father and other people, but there are people that were very close to me that have passed that I've never heard from in a reading. And I would love to hear from those. And as a medium will tell you, they can't bring a spirit through on demand. They just open up a channel and they see who's waiting at the door to talk to you. And, you know, I wish it could be more direct. I wish you could be more specific on who you talk to. But unfortunately, you kind of take what you get. And that's another good point to bring up is that the whole idea of mediumship and getting a reading and where the comfort lies in knowing that your loved one still exists. Comfort lies in that you will still exist, that you don't have to fear death because death is just a transition into the next form. And as we've heard from the near-death experiences, the next form is way better than this one. So, those are the things you get. So you don't need a specific reading to get the message and to get the comfort. Although it's mind blowing and it's wonderful when it comes through and it's a great experience, but I'm hopeful that people will see the bigger picture. Like when we have our holidays passed, where there's a room full of 70 people, and in a two-hour period, you know, maybe 20 or so people will actually get read, and yet asking, kind of doing an exit poll as people left, and I will ask, did you get a reading? No. Did you get something out of the evening? And they say, oh yes, the being in the room and seeing somebody else get a very meaningful reading can be so comforting to you as well. And I also know people that I've sent to mediums, and they come back and how was your reading? It was lousy. Well, why? Well, my father came through. Yeah. And he talked about this and this, but he didn't talk about that. And it's like, well, you know, that's, you're not going to get all of it. You just be grateful for what you have.
I have to add, Tom, I know that person who had that reading, and the medium told us later that that person had such a negative energy that she had to sage the whole place to clear the air.
Here's another good question. If a person passes in the grip of dementia, having forgotten family and friends, does that memory return in the afterlife? There's a second part to that. Also along the same line, if a person passes from dementia, would it be appropriate to think that their consciousness passed over before their body, and do they still remember their family and their loved ones? So the way I would look at it is, when you have dementia, it's the hardware that's damaged, you know. The hardware meaning the brain, but the soul or your consciousness is still very much alive and fully functioning. It's just that the mechanism to express, or receive, messages is severely damaged or gone. So, yeah, I mean, assuming that memories are not stored in the brain, and there's a lot of evidence that says that they're not, then sure, they remember you, they remember their loved ones, they remember their life, and they keep their personalities. So that's the way I would look at it, and that's borne out by medium readings where their loved ones have passed due to advanced dementia, and yet the messages come through clear, as well as their personalities. So I think that's kind of strong evidence that that dementia does not erase things.
Yeah, true.
I agree.
And that your near-death experiences show that as well. If somebody is flatlined on a gurney, and yet they're watching all this happening and remembering all this happening, that definitely separates the whole conscious being from the physical being. And right. not only would dementia go away when you die, apparently if you were a real son of a gun in life, a lot of people in death come back and apologize for that. They see the errors of the ways that they're not, somebody saying that, oh, I don't want to hear from him. He was a real nasty person in life. And a lot of times they'll come through to the medium and say, yeah, I'm sorry, I was such a nasty person in life. So there's a lot of healing that goes on after death as well.
Definitely that, after the life review, and you see the error of your ways.
Another question. Can one be an atheist and still accept the concept of afterlife? I don't see why not. I mean, let's just say that the afterlife is, so it's not dependent upon a belief in God. You're in one place and you go to another place. It's more about physics, than religion. You go into a different dimension. So, of course, you know, believing in God and subscribing to a specific religion, you may interpret things differently, at least initially, you know. So that's why, like Tom mentioned, near-death experiences, you know, some people that are of one religion might see Jesus, another one might see Buddha, another one might see this heavenly image and interpret it as you know, as Moses, or, you know, so your orientation, your religious orientation, I suspect, you know, initially, you know, has some effect on the way that you perceive things when you cross over. But then as things go on, I think that religion, because there's another question here, is the religion as we know it here on earth, like Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, etc.? I don't think so. I mean, I think I don't think there's organized religion on the other side. I think there's just love and compassion and energies. So I think that maybe we come to realize once we're there that all the religions are the same and they're based upon the same principles and there's no rules there. We're entities of thought and energy. So what do you think?
Yeah, I just read a quote that I really appreciated right along those lines. And it said, Buddha was not a Buddhist. Jesus was not a Christian. Muhammad was not a Muslim. They were all prophets who taught love.
That's beautiful.
And that's what it is. And as the Rastafari will say, there's only one love. And that's the love of the universe. And that is really where religion should start and end, in my opinion. But yeah, that's the energy of the, as you say, physics. The energy of the universe, which cannot be created or destroyed, is the energy. And you, if you want to call him God, if you want to call him Allah, if you want to call him whatever, it's still the one energy.
I think if anyone has the opportunity, who's interested in this and has the opportunity to communicate with their loved one in spirit, that might be something you might want to inquire about. I always felt I'm not a follower of religion. I'm interested in hearing people's beliefs, but I don't subscribe to any religious beliefs myself. And I also feel the same way pretty much about politics. And I would have to say that in all the readings, not personal ones, but in group readings or what's been conveyed to me, that never comes through as being important at all. Never.
Yeah, I was just reading another question here, and it's a bit long, but it's, I think we can, you know, summarize it here, and it's something a lot of people probably contemplate, including myself, you know, that, you know, person is questioning about pain and suffering, you know, so that there, we have these experiences, but that beings on the other side, in the afterlife, you know, are more advanced than us. And here she says, we're taught many teachings such as love and kindness is the key to everything. And that what matters in our existence. From what I understand, life on the other side is thought reality, where you create your own reality. So why can't knowledge and information be gained the way that you think? She's saying, why create suffering? You know, if there are, why can't the people on the other side just show us the knowledge, you know, that we need to have instead of going through physical, you know, pain and suffering? That's kind of the gist of it. You know, she's wondering what a lot of people wonder is, you know, is there a purpose to physical pain and suffering? Can't we just be taught these lessons, you know, from a thought process from these people that have a much broader perspective than us?
I think you would never incarnate into a physical form if it was going to be like that. You just learn all these lessons as a soul, as a spirit, and this physical existence, which teaches us or gives us those experiences, would be unnecessary.
So you think that there's we couldn't learn the same lessons through a thought process that had, you know, without having the physical sensations.
Well, kind of that you don't know the beauty of the light until you've been in the dark.
Yes,
it's basically that. You don't, you know, you wake up in the morning and say, hey, I feel great. Well, that's compared to what? As compared to this pain and suffering I just finished, you know, that, that is the age-old question. I mean, if most people put it in religious terms, well, if there is a God, then why does he do this to good people and that sort of thing? And it's all part of the, well, and let's bring it into modern terms here. If you're going to go get a vaccine, they're going to stick a needle in your arm, and some people are going to go, ouch, why am I got the needle in my arm? Can't you just vaccinate me without sticking me? Well, no. So can't I learn what I need to learn in life without having pain and suffering? Well, that's what you signed up for, kind of.
Yeah. You know, I was just reading another question that came in along the same lines, and, you know, and it's contemplating, you know, so we keep learning these lessons, but if you look back, you know, hundreds or thousands of years, we don't seem to have learned much from all these lessons. You know, we don't seem to be progressing. You know, she says, you know, I can't, you know, she says, I this particular, listener, you know, lost his or her son. And, you know, and that's a lesson. And you know, she says, it's a selfish one, and I don't want any part of it, you know. You know? So, you know, so I mean, it's a point. I mean, if the whole meaning and purpose is for us to continually learn lessons, shouldn't we be further advanced spiritually than what we are now?
Yeah, in fact, it seems that we've taken big steps back in spiritualism. It seems that people were a lot more spiritually oriented in the 1800s, like this gentleman at the beginning of the show pointed out. The mediums from 100 years ago seem to have been more, I'm not going to say comparatively, but the point was that people were more accepting and more aware and more woke, if you will, than people are today, to be sure.
Yeah. Here's one. Actually, we touched on this. I'm sure this might be outside the scope of the show, but I thought I would ask, any thoughts on Jim Tucker's research with children? Do our loved ones take on another person in a new life? He goes on to say that this person hates the idea of reincarnation. When I meet the person who I care most about that they've lost, I want that person to be there, as simplistic as that may sound. Well, it's not simplistic, and it's a question that we've addressed a lot of times before. And I guess the consensus, I think, is that even though a soul reincarnates, the soul is made up of many, many fragments, and that their old self is not truly lost. I mean,
right.
A medium could still communicate with your loved one, even if your loved one does reincarnate, which is a hard concept to grasp, but that seems to be what we're told.
Well, there are a couple of things. I will direct the questioner to the book Seth Speaks, the Seth Chronicles, which is a fascinating account of a channeled spirit who tries to explain what it's like to be a soul on the other side. A lot of the times, and often in the book, he will say, well, I would explain this to you, but your feeble little human mind couldn't understand it. Right. But basically, that your soul is like an octopus, and that the tentacles, each tentacle can be living in existence, one here today with you, one 100 years ago in England, you know, one on another planet, and they all exist simultaneously. And so when your loved one, the physical body of your loved one passes, the soul, which, as we also talked about in this show, is still around you, still loves you, still cares about you, still interested in your life, and will be waiting for you when you go across. But they also could be experiencing life as a little boy in Oklahoma. So, you know, it's I would direct this person to check out the Netflix docuseries, because they talk about some of these fascinating reincarnations where the a little boy in Oklahoma meets an 80-year-old woman in California who was his sister in an earlier life. And they get together and they start talking about what it was like when they were kids. So that existence, many children that still even retain the memories of that person and meet up with the families that they used to live in. That's really mind-blowing, and it doesn't help the questioner much, but that does happen.
It also makes me wonder, thinking of the other young man that they featured and how troubled he seemed, wouldn't you wonder if you found out you were reincarnated, like the way they sort of, there was so much evidence, like, what am I to do with this information? Am I meant to be doing something? And then your whole life might be spent rather frustrated if you don't figure out what you think you've been brought back for. I read that in a similar incident where somebody was miraculously saved from a burning dorm room, that he found himself out on the lawn as if some otherworldly figure had lifted him up and hurled him out the window, whereas everybody else in the building burned up. And he led kind of a tortured life after that, because why me? Why me? Why was I the only one saved? What am I to do with this? So it isn't always a blessing, maybe.
Sometimes it's not. And then we also have the question, does everybody reincarnate? And we don't know the answer to that either. I think it is a choice. I have another question here. Can you comment on entanglement? So entanglement, we can comment from a physics perspective, but it doesn't necessarily make the jump to a spiritual, although I think it does. You know, so from a physics perspective, you know, we know, like, if you take two photons and you shoot them off in opposite directions at the speed of light into the universe, and you change the spin on one, its mate automatically shows the same rotation spin. I mean, it's impossible to happen, but it happens. So these two particles, you know, traveling at the speed of light, you know, at unbelievable distances apart, one affects the other, so they're entangled. So then do we make the jump that on a macro level, might we be entangled too? I mean, my actions are affecting, you know, other people, you know, and if we all come from that same spark of light, then just like those photons, we're entangled as well. It's hard to recognize when we look at people that don't look like us and don't act like us, but we're all entangled, you know. So when you look at it from that perspective, it becomes a spiritual perspective. You know, I mean, we should, you know, if we're all connected and live in a connected universe, the stuff that you're watching on TV now is just bullshit. You know, it's like, it's like we used to say in the 60s. You know, why can't we all just get along? You know, hell. Should we're entangled, you know?
Well, and that is the one of the basic principles of spirituality and religion for that matter, is that the spirit of the universe lives in us. Mm-hmm. It's in us. It's in everybody, and it's the same spirit, and we are connected to every other spirit, and that's why, you know, the teaching, love thy neighbor as thyself, is for that very reason, because your neighbor is yourself. Yeah. And you can not agree with what they're doing in the physical world, and that. But it's like if you have a, you know, if you have a hangnail and it's really bothering you, do you cut off your finger? No, you're supposed you treat it. You act in this sense, taking the metaphor away, of you act with kindness towards one another. You have compassion for one another. You have love for one another, and that will solve the physical problems. I mean, we need a lot of it if we're going to solve what's going on now, but that's right. Where it starts.
We have time for another. I'm struggling with the belief that when a person is dead, they're dead. Ashes and ashes to ashes, nothing else. How do we know otherwise? Well, that's a fair question. I guess the best answer is, how do we know? It's like everything else we observe, and you know, we learn, and then we make our own judgments. You know, in our case, when it comes to life after death, you know by several ways. One is examining the evidence for it. You know, so that's what everybody does. You examine the evidence and you form an opinion. Some of the things we've been talking about: reincarnation and mediumship and near death experiences, and you know, end of life experiences, and electronic voice phenomena, and apparitions, and signs, and so forth. And then there's the personal experiences, you know, and that's more of a internal exploration. So it's only you could determine, you know, whether you know, you know, and believe, and you can get there many different ways. Lots of times it just takes a transformative experience, and then you know, and that's the best answer. Hopefully you can get one.
And that's the best way to do it, is personally. You can intellectualize it, which I have done, and come to conclusions. But until you are actually face to face with an experience, that's everything. Because even if you've gone to a medium and you have a great reading, the next day you go back to work and you're back in the day to day rat race and all of that sort of stuff, and it all can easily disappear. So it's you have to have an open mind. You have to be a healthy skeptic. I like the person saying, well, I think it's this. Well, yeah, you think it's that. Now put it to the test. And if the test holds up, then you go away saying, no, it's this. But if you all of a sudden say, well, I tested it this way and something else happened that I didn't expect, well, then you have to go down the road of what you didn't expect. Why did that other thing happen? And if you keep your open mind and you keep collecting the evidence, there's a lot of evidence out there to suggest that there is way more to life than just this physical form.
And as our friend Jeff Kane said, isn't it better to believe in something than to believe in nothing?
Right. I know we only have 2 minutes left. There's another question that came in. If one wants to communicate with a loved one who has passed over, do you have to speak out loud, or can the communication occur through quiet thought? And the answer is no, you don't have to speak out loud, but you could, and then some people find that helpful. But they're entities of thought, you know, and really so are you, essentially. So whether you're talking to them internally through thought or externally, I do both. You guys agree with that, I assume?
Absolutely, yes.
I've always been excited by that thought, of because I've always said my thoughts are so much deeper than what comes out of my mouth. So I'm excited for that opportunity to just convey my thoughts. I think my dad is appreciating that right now, too.
And to what she just said was, the thoughts are deeper. Sometimes I have thoughts, and I know they're not my thoughts. But you know, if I have a question, or I'm talking with myself about something that happens, and then all of a sudden a voice in my back of my head goes, "Yeah, well, what about this?"
Yeah,
and that happens to me all the time. And I think I'm getting to feel now that that is another entity or one of my guides or whatever they are just coming in and helping me along. So I try to listen to those voices a little more to see where they're taking me.
All right. We will address more of these questions on the next show. Let's do our global peace prayer. Let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are just a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.